But I have worked for CEOs that have a very low EQ. And that may be okay in the beginning, but when shit hits the fan, it's not okay.
Right.
It's not
And it
okay.
will.
And it will, because it always does.
It's funny, Stephanie made the connection that I failed to make is that we actually met and spoke at an event a couple years ago at a Chief Revenue Officers Summit in New York City, where they brought together, it was hosted by Pavilion, who brought together a lot of revenue operators into a room. And what was the observation, Stephanie, that you and I both made?
Just not enough women in the room.
Oh
Not
my
enough women
gosh,
in the room. It was a
heartbreaking.
man fest.
It was. And listen, if I was in my 20s, I may have enjoyed that, but the reality is we don't see enough females in these roles. And so super excited to share your story today, Stephanie, and get into things. Welcome to the She's So Sweet podcast, where we interview accomplished women who have worked their way to the C-suite. I'm your host, Chrissy Falteruso, Chief Customer Officer and award-winning Customer Success Executive. I am so thrilled to introduce today's guest, Stephanie Valenti. She has been an executive and revenue operator for the past 8 years. Stephanie, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. I can't wait for the conversation, Christy.
I'm so excited. I like stalked your background and I was so impressed because as we chatted about, there are just not enough women holding these revenue leadership roles. So obviously I see your background and I am itching to get you on and so excited to get into our conversation today.
Wonderful. Yeah, I agree. Not enough. We're going to change that though. We're going to change
We
that.
are. And for folks that are listening, it's funny, Stephanie made the connection that I failed to make is that we actually met and spoke at an event a couple years ago at a Chief Revenue Officers Summit in New York City, where they brought together, it was hosted by Pavilion, who brought together a lot of revenue operators into a room. And what was the observation, Stephanie, that you and I both made?
Just not enough women in the room.
Oh
Not
my
enough women
gosh,
in the room. It was a
heartbreaking.
man fest.
It was. And listen, if I was in my 20s, I may have enjoyed that, but the reality is we don't see enough females in these roles. And so super excited to share your story today, Stephanie, and get into things. So before we get started, let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, roles that you've held. I want to make sure that everyone has the breadth and depth of some of the scopes of the work that you've done.
Yeah, absolutely. It's every time I get this question, I'm like, oh, where do you start, right? But if we're just talking about these executive roles that I've held, you know, my first executive role was with a mid-market company, about 300 million. I was an SVP of global sales, and they were running multiple motions like e-com, DTC, and wanted me to build a B2B motion. So I had incredible success there. First time at the executive table, the only female, and working with really seasoned executives. So lots of learnings from that role. I then had the opportunity to take off revenue hat for about a year and a half and learn the other side of the business as a COO. So in that role, I was running manufacturing, like on the floor with labor. So that was a lot of learnings. I looked at these machines. I'm like, am I supposed to like know how to use these things? I had the opportunity to lead finance, which was incredibly important for my development, HR, and then just general business operations, which was great. That was a company that I had the luxury of taking from 5 to 25 million as an operator, which was great. So much smaller than scope of what I'd done in the past. And then after that, I came back into revenue because I just missed it so much as a CRO, but truly running the entire go-to-market. So not just sales and marketing, but also all client delivery, revenue operations and product for a services company. That company was, I had, I think it ran two M&As there. So when people say how much and headcount, I think we ended at 35, 40 million and about two, maybe 300 people in that org. So amazing experiences throughout. And then I've done some contracted roles for healthcare. So very diverse set of experience, a lot of different motions, and a lot of different departmental responsibility.
Wow, that is, it's so impressive to hear the breadth and depth of all the roles that you've held. Now, we know that you're looking for your next amazing opportunity. So as you're thinking about what's next for Stephanie? What are the types of roles in organizations, or as a leader, what are some of the things that you evaluate to ensure that the company is the best fit for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've had a lot of time to reflect on this while I've been looking for new work. And I've done a lot of the standard things, like Amy Volas says, create a scorecard, right? So I created my scorecard and I wrote down my ICP. And what I'm finding is it's not as black and white as that. Mm-hmm. And so throughout my career, I could say I've been very opportunistic. I've kind of gotten pulled from one opportunity to another and never really sat down and said, no, what do I actually want? And what do I actually enjoy instead of what opportunity is next? And so for me right now, I know that I am a scaler. I love looking at chaos and coming in and really making it sustainable. Like, you know, I love the pain of that, I guess. I like that. And then I've met with a couple of coaches and they're like, Stephanie, you're just type of person that needs complex problems to solve all the time. So I need a complex problem. I'm going to fix that. And then I need my next complex problem. And so wherever I'm going, I know that those are two things that have to be there. I also am paying very close attention to the people I'm going to be working with, because I've had experiences where maybe the stage of growth was great and the product was the right thing. But the people I was working with, I didn't like. Right.
That makes a big difference.
And you spend so much time with these people. As an executive, you're sometimes working 12, 14 hour days alongside these peers. You got to like them. Right.
Yeah.
And if you don't like, you at least have to respect.
Respect. So, that's what I was going to say. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm spending a lot of time in these conversations, making sure that I want to work with these people. So industry agnostic, really, when I'm looking, as long as they have a great product, they're at the right stage, and I like the people that I would be working with, that's really what I'm focused on.
I love that. Let me dig a little bit deeper here before we move on.
Yeah.
What are the traits of your CEO, the CEO that you're going to work for? Because we know, especially once you get to the C-suite, right? Like that's almost the make or break person, because you have to be aligned with their vision and who they are and their values. And so what are the things that as you're interviewing, because remember everybody, you interview as much as the company interviews. So when you're interviewing the CEO, what is this person? What do they look like? What are their traits? What do they have that you need?
Yeah. I'm looking for level of emotional intelligence, and that's not always easy to do in an interview, but I have worked for CEOs that have a very low EQ. And that may be okay in the beginning, but when shit hits the fan, it's not okay.
Right.
It's not
okay. And it will.
And it will, because it always does. And you say, like, how do you test for that, right? I will listen to how they speak about other executives on the team. That's important to me.
Yeah.
So like, talk to me about the team, Mr. or Mrs. CEO, right? What's finance like? How is your technology leader? And I listen. If there is negativity or any like sense of drama that comes out while discussing these peers, I'm out. That's a new red flag for me.
That's really good. I like that.
And it happens. It happens.
Of course it does.
And it's like, wow, like if you're already talking poorly about the people that you lead today, my guess is that I'm going to be right there in it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just continual. So I really look for that. So that's something I pay attention to. And then how well do they know their business? I've worked for a lot of CEOs that really don't know what's going on within their organization. And I want to work for someone that wants to be a part of the organization, that wants to help, that wants to ask interesting and difficult questions. I also want conflict. I am not someone that, and we'll talk about like, how do you get to C-suite? You got to speak up, right? So I want to have healthy conflict at the table. I want to ask a difficult question. I want them to challenge me in the interview. So if I say something that they disagree with, I'm looking for them to say, ooh, I don't know if I believe the same way. I want that, right? Because that's a healthy organization. If they're not doing that, then they're doing it. They're just not doing it in a forefront, you know, proactive way. And they're doing it behind the scenes in maybe not a healthy way. So those are three things that are real important to me.
I love that, Stephanie. I think it's great advice. Just obviously we know in today's market, so many folks are out there looking for jobs and looking for work. Yeah. And I encourage folks to really dive deep when interviewing these companies, because you have to get it right for you, right? And it looks different for everybody. Everybody has different needs and
absolutely
expectations, and that's okay. But you nailed it though, right? When you're thinking about the people, and me as like the CEO is the big one for me. And I'm like, I gotta be aligned with you, right? Like our values have to be aligned. Your vision and my vision have to be aligned. Like I have to feel good about this. So I love that feedback. I love the advice. Thank you so much. Now, I love that you're excited about being a CRO and a COO, but I am not convinced that that's what you wanted to do your entire life. So when you were little Stephanie, what did you want to be when you grew up? So where did you think you would do, or what were some of the things that excited you when you were young?
Yeah. So I was very, very particular about what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a pediatrician that focused on kids with autism and Down syndrome. That's what I wanted to do. And I had it like written out. I did a lot of volunteer work in elementary school and middle school and high school, where they would pull me out and I would go spend time with kids with disabilities. And I loved it. It filled my heart.
Well, Stephanie, so then what happened? Because I need to know how you went from this, that you're clearly talking with such passion and enthusiasm. Yeah. Where did this change? How did you deviate from being this pediatrician?
Yeah. So you can't expect everything that happens in life, right? So went through, was planning on going to college, right? At the end of my senior year, had all of that planned out, was going to go and look into something like an undergrad in biology. So that was continually the plan, and really decided it was a great idea to find this boyfriend in my senior year. Got pregnant. So ended up being a 19-year-old mom, and that'll change things. That'll change your plans pretty quickly. I did still end up going to school, but definitely not on that same path, right? I had to make decisions that were going to be best for me. And now as a 19-year-old mom, right? That child. And so I put that on the back burner a little bit and found a different path.
I love that. And, you know, it's interesting that you didn't let anything prohibit you from still being wildly successful, right? You might start off with an idea of what that journey will look like, and that's okay because that's life. And guess what? Things don't always work out as planned. And so I love that. What were some of the things that you kind of learned earlier than probably some as a result of this, right? Like being a young mom is hard. I mean, being an old mom is hard. So what were some of the learnings that you kind of took away as a younger mom that you feel like benefited you later in life?
Yeah. Sleep is not something that comes easy, right? So I was not someone my parents were supportive, but I was not someone that ever said, I need this or I need that. Like, I'm going to take care of myself. And so, but to do that, you've got to work a lot, right? So I went to school, worked two jobs, slept very little. And what really pushed that is not because I wanted more money. It's I was not going to let the stigma of being a young, you know, teenage mom determine the rest of my life. I was not going to let that happen. And so, you know, lots of hard work. I call it's grit. It really is, right? Something happened in my life that I was not expecting, and it flipped a switch inside of me that said, you know what, you're going to have to work really hard. You're probably not going to have a lot of fun like the rest of the, you know, 20, 21 year olds out there. You're going to, almost get your calluses really early, and you're going to keep taking risks and you're going to keep jumping in. And, I never let that go away. Right. I just kept going. And I did start out and like went into the medical field, like I said, I was going to, and worked at front desk, and then got into coding, and then got into the back office, and then got into like x-ray certification. And what I realized through all those jumps is like, I'm never going to be able to get to the top of this unless I become a doctor. And I am someone that, like I said, solve complex problems, right? I'm going to perfect something, get it really good, and then I want the next thing. Well, I couldn't do that in the medical field. So I knew really early that it was going to have to be something else for me.
Oh, you were just too driven to hold a role that wouldn't give you that next opportunity. Good for you.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, that was a big pivotal moment, but I'm sure that there have been others along the way. So absolutely. As you reflect back on your career journey, what were some of those real pivotal moments or the decisions that you had to make that you feel like contributed to your ascent to the C-suite?
Yeah. So like I had said, I was a young mom, but I didn't stop having kids. So at 25, I had my next one. And then in my 30s, I had another. And so if we go back to having two kids, at this point, I had went through, you know, the restaurant world a little bit and climbed that and realized, okay, I got to GM in corporate and I'm 26. Like, now what? Right. And someone looked at me and said, Steph, you've got to get into sales. Right? You have to. You're too driven. You work really hard. Go do it. And I'm like, okay. So at this point, I'd been in sales. I'd been an individual contributor, and I was ready for leadership. I had 3 months into my role, I went into my district manager's office, and I said, hey, just so you know, I want to be a leader here. And I know I just started, but that's what I want. And every single month I would go in and do that. And so, but as far as like pivotal moments, I had to make decisions a lot between my family and promotions and what is best for my, like taking into consideration kids, husband, moving, promotions, more responsibility. I moved a lot. I chose my work. And to the eye, it's like, oh my gosh, how many times did you move your kids for work? Why did you put that first? I didn't just do it for my work. I did it for my children's livelihood and value, and so that I could give them the best life, right? As through the viewpoint of myself. And so that was my very first promotion. I was living in Arizona, and I had got the opportunity to move to Denver to get my first sales management role. And my kids were both school age at that point. The middle one may have been a little younger. And I was pregnant with the next one, the third one. And wow.
So now you're pregnant and you moved to Denver.
Yep. Moved to Denver, took on my first sales management role. So picked them up and moved them. 2 years later, moved them again back to Arizona for another opportunity. All the same company, but they're promotions, right? And you want to move up, you got to move. That's the way it was back then when it was field sales, right? And not inside sales. And then after 2 years there, moved to Nashville. After 2 years in Nashville, moved to Texas, and I'm here now. But that is four moves. And if you look at my oldest one, right, he even went to a total of three high schools. He doesn't love me for that, right?
It's hard. It's hard.
But those were decision moments that I had to make. And he's great, right? By the way, he's learned resilience and learned how to deal with change really well. But that was a decision that I had to make in my career, right? Family, right? Personal, leaving friends behind. And I wouldn't change it, but it was definitely big decisions every time.
Those are really big decisions and not easy ones when you think about, you know, they impact everybody. I think count your blessings that you had a supportive spouse, it sounds like, who was obviously open to you pursuing these opportunities and really supportive, it sounds like, because I know if you didn't have that support, you may not have been able to take on these new promotions and these new opportunities. So that's wonderful also. Yeah. And I think a huge testament to what you've built at home.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great. We really did decide to switch roles at one point where he was taking care of the children. He was pushing the stroller and picking the kids up. And so he became that stay-at-home dad. And during that time, it was very rare. There was not much of that out there. But I did find the other women in the world, right, that were experiencing the same thing, so that we could have our right? Our talks about, do they keep the house clean and you know, all this stuff. Like if I was actually doing the mom thing, would I do it the same way? And, but it was, I'm very thankful that we decided to make that decision. And he has this unbelievable, relationship with our children, very different than what I've seen with other dads.
Right. Yeah. That's amazing. I know that my husband is going to listen to this episode and he's going to be like, see, I can do it. I can stay home because that's his dream job is staying home to raise our daughter. Aww. And she's going to be off to college soon. So then he won't have that opportunity and he could just keep working. So that's what I need him to do. That's amazing. I love that story. And listen, honestly, you're setting a great example for your kids and being able to see a mom be so successful and the role reverse at home, I think is so important. I don't think that there are enough examples of really strong fathers who are playing a different role at home. And so good for you and your family. And honestly, I think that your kids are going to be better off. Like to your point, they've learned change, resilience, how to make friends, right? Because I'm sure, you know, that's part of it too, totally. Right? Yeah. So you know what? I think all of this, you made all the right decisions and I'm sure everyone is better because of it. And I love that story. Now, obviously, with some of these changes and with just jobs in general, there is obstacles, right? We always are faced to overcome hurdles and we have the battle scars to prove it. So share with us, like what were some of the significant challenges or obstacles that you had to face and how did you overcome them? Because again, getting to where you are right now, especially with the journey you just outlined for us, not easy.
Not easy, not easy. I would say that my first 8 years really didn't have a lot of challenges. When I think back to my growth into sales leadership, I was with a big company. I was having reoccurring success every 2 years. And I thought that everything looked like that, right? So I bought all the support. I've got all the systems. I just need to like lead my team really well. And that's it. And everything will go well. And then I went into this company as an executive for the first time. And I'm sitting at a table. And all I know how to do is speak sales. Right? Because in a Fortune 100, it doesn't matter your level. If you're running sales and you're not an EVP or an SVP, you're running sales, right? Yeah. You're not working with marketing. You're not talking finance speak. You're not, challenged with operations. And so here I am sitting at a table with a CFO that was a CFO at Skechers, right? CMO that was a very high up at Pizza Hut, like the COO that was at Southwest Airlines as an EVP. And here's little old me, right? In my early 30s, that is the SVP of sales running the largest headcount in the company and responsible for $300 million. And they all just look at me and said, you're the only one with B2B experience. We need you to teach us. My mistake, I didn't have community back then. So I didn't have anyone to ask. I just did. And I put myself in a little silo and I worked too much and too hard. And I didn't have anyone to teach me anything because they didn't know. Right. And I got myself into some trouble, right? The CFO, I did not know how to speak his language. He was a totally different human at every aspect of the word than me. And so I would say, oh, here's what we're doing and blah, 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 right? Like normal, like sales speak. And he just kind of like look at me like with this face, like, what are you talking about? He would openly belittle me. In executive meetings, I would get yelled at, right, in front of the group. So instead of being pulled aside and saying like, hey, in an executive role, when you're speaking to finance, these are the things that help me. It was not like that. It was tough. And I had great successes then. But when I didn't get to see all of those successes until very, very like 2 years out of getting out of the mess. Do I get to look back and be like, damn, I did a really good job, right? Because while I was in it, it was just constant second guessing myself, thinking if I was good enough, thinking if I was in a role too big for myself, not knowing like not knowing who to reach out to or who to depend on. So it was tough. So that was something, I always say, I always have to learn the hard way for some reason. What is wrong with me? Right? Why do I have to go in here and learn the hard way? But, that is what I did there. I learned the hard way. I will say it prompted me, to become a financial expert on planning and things like that. But it was, it's only because I failed at it that I needed to become an expert.
It's tough. It's a hard story to hear because I think so many folks do feel stranded and alone and don't have the proper support systems in place yet. And honestly, that was a big part of why I wanted to start this podcast, was to help really elevate the stories of other women who are navigating similar challenges and, you know, encourage folks to reach out and to build that network. Because I think had you had more support and your own Yes. little executive board, you would have been able to go to your peers and colleagues and friends and ask for that advice and really lean on them and also validate that you are good enough, you are in the right role. And, you know, sometimes that negative self-talk could really be detrimental to us as professionals and especially as women.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And the minute I left that organization, I joined a community. I mean, it pushed me into, yeah, not going to make those mistakes again, right? So it was that fast, but it was definitely a very, very difficult almost 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we got to pivot because it's getting deep and sad. And I know that obviously you've had to have tremendous success and you've alluded to some of it in the stories that you've already shared, but what were some of those really successful moments, right? You look back and you're like patting yourself on the back and you're like, yes, I did that. I did it. I built this team. I drove that impact, right? What were your big wins when you look back so far? The She's So Sweet podcast is brought to you by Client Success. Client Success is an all-in-one customer success platform to help post-sale implementation and success teams manage customers from new to renew. Through an industry-leading platform approach, Client Success gives businesses an in-depth view into customer health, product usage trends, along with churn and risk data so that your team can not only retain customers, but help them grow as well. Whether it's managing customer onboarding workflows in shared portals, building custom health scores, tracking sentiment with NPS surveys, or doing more with less through AI and automations, Client Success gives customer success professionals a true one-stop platform to manage all aspects of the customer journey. To learn more about the industry's fastest to implement customer success platform, visit www.clientsuccess.com. That's Client Success. Simple, powerful customer success. What were some of those really successful moments, right? You look back and you're like patting yourself on the back and you're like, yes, I did that. I did it. I built this team. I drove that impact, right? What were your big wins when you look back so far?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to my time in that new SVP role, right? I look back and I realized that I took a 40 person inside sales order taking company, built out a new product line and brought it from zero to almost 200 million. I grew a sales organization that was using NetSuite as their CRM, launched Salesforce, put in place like business development teams, vertical, state, local, and federal teams, created channel for the first time, got into Office Depot with that product, ended up building brick and mortar locations across the country. And what started with me and no managers or hierarchies and only two women on the team ended in over 200 sellers. More than half of the team were female. I had a female VP and two males, right, with lots of directors underneath. So not only did I diversify, build, and also just have tremendous growth, I was growing at the same time, right? And so I look back and I said, yes, I felt like I was failing and I was hard on myself, but every little failure was promoting to me to be stronger in another area. I also survived COVID there, and it was a commercial furniture company. So like getting creative and coming up with work from home programs and partnering with Google, and like those were all outside of the box, like really unique ways to keep the company going during that time. And I did that. So that was successful for me. I think the other piece that I really don't talk about often enough, and that someone brought up on a different podcast the other day, is after I left that organization and, you know, got into community, Sam Jacobs, I gave him feedback on a forecasting class because I was one of the cohort leaders. And I said, hey, this is hard to follow. Like, it's going over people's head. It's not facilitated in the right way. And he goes, cool, you're teaching it now. And I'm like, what? It's SaaS forecasting. I'm not in SaaS. At the time I was a COO, right, for a manufacturing company. And he's like, no, you're fine. You'll do it. And so what did I do? Like, I was studying my rear end off, right? Because I was going to have all of these SaaS CROs looking at me, telling me how they should forecast an annual plan their business. And so I made myself an expert. And at this point, I've trained over 3,000 executives at really large, well-known companies, how they should go about their annual planning process. And I had never even done what they had done at that moment, right, with that type of revenue model. And so I'm proud of myself for that, right? I put myself out there and in a really uncomfortable situation. And now I do consider myself an expert. But in the moment, like, I was just kind of thrown in. He's like, you're a great facilitator. You're fine. Oh, God.
So well, that was a good one, too. When I asked for your successes, you did not disappoint. Those are really amazing stories. And I think what I love most about what you've just shared is that these weren't things that you have done before, right? These were things that you did for the first time in these moments and were still wildly successful. And I think that's something that's really important for folks to just remember and to listen to. Like, there will always be a first time.
Yes.
And don't stray away from that, right? Like, take the opportunities that are given to you and believe that when people believe in you, that they're onto something, right? Like, there's a reason why you're in the role, and don't second guess yourself. Somebody else validated you by giving you this opportunity. So
Absolutely.
I love that, Stephanie. Amazing stories. Good for you. That is, and I know that you're only going to continue to drive the same amount of success in the future, and I'm excited to hear about it. But now, listen, I know obviously you're doing some of this facilitation, you're doing these courses, and you're doing so much out there in your communities. And you know me, I love the saying, empowered women empower women. So what are you doing to empower other women, especially as they take on leadership roles?
Yeah. So I think first things first, in every organization that I've been in, I create or at least support mentorship programs, and we'll take on a minimum of 3 mentees at all times. And they're always females. And I do that even as busy as a CRO's schedule gets with multiple departments. And usually some of them might be in leadership roles, but I like to take individual contributors as well, because I want to help women find their path. Right? No one talks to people about what their path should actually be or what it should look like. So in their heads, and this goes to everybody and not just females, they think management's next no matter what. I have to get into this role. And so often it's not for them. Right? It's not. And so that is one of my favorite things to do, is mentor others. I do it through community as well. I always raise my hand to support other females in their journey. I also, anytime someone asks, hey, can I ask you about this? Can I reach out and get more information? Can I throw something past you? I'm a yes girl. So I say yes a lot. Now it's gotten me in trouble, right? Because I say yes to too much. But if it is a female that is looking to just have support, validation, vent, I'm in. So I do dedicate a lot of time.
Stephanie, you hit on something that's so important, and we're not going to have time in this episode to spend, because we could probably make it its own unique episode, but leadership is not for everyone. And there are multiple ways to move forward and move up in your career that do not require you to be a leader. And I think that is such an important message for everyone to hear, because leadership is hard. I'm very open about this all the time. People leadership is the hardest part of the work that I have ever done in a leadership role in any organization. It's not the work. It's not the executives. It's not the pressure. It's not trying to learn new things. It's the people part. And you have to love it, and you have to want to really invest in growing your skills around doing it well, because you're impacting the lives of other people. Like this is yeah. really important, and it's not for everybody, and it's okay. So I love that you are working on that career pathing, because so often we let the companies that we work for dictate what's next yeah. instead of us controlling our destiny. So kudos to you for being a leader who spends time to educate and enable others on their options, right? And trying to yeah. figure out what's best for them, because again, it might not be people.
Yeah, it sure might not be. There are plenty of people out there that are in leadership roles that absolutely should not be.
Oh, amen to that.
It's for that very reason, right?
I think I've worked for all of them. Just kidding. Some of them. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the other aspects of leadership. And this one is really important to me, because I think there's a lot of folks that are striving to find a very high senior level role and think that it comes with all of this balance, right, that you're going to be able to create. And I think as we have now, you know, released today, we've released our 7th episode of this. Every single female I've interviewed so far has a different way of describing this. So when you think about balancing the demands of having a C-level position, you've talked about the family that you've built at home, and obviously you've got a tremendous support system. But how do you personally navigate the balance of work and your personal life? And are there strategies or any habits that you've developed that have been really effective for you?
Yeah. Look, I don't know if true balance in a traditional sense is possible in an executive role. You are, when you take the C, right? When you take that C in your title, you are now responsible for the entire organization's success and all of the people that are in it. And that is a huge responsibility. And so when all of those people need you, you signed up to be there. And I know that your family needs you too. But there are countless times that I have had my daughter standing outside of my double glass doors over here, pressing her face against the glass, right? Acting crazy, wanting to come in, being like, are you almost done? Are you almost done? And I'm having to look at that sad little face and be like, I'm not. Like, I've got to work tonight. What I will say is it's not all doom and gloom, right? You do have to set some time for yourself. And it's something I've had to learn. So, you know, I've mentioned already, I'm a yes woman, yes woman. And that can get you in a lot of trouble at work, especially when things are stressful, like during merger and acquisition times, or, you know, numbers aren't where they should be, right? It definitely upticks during those times. And I've had to learn how to not just balance family, but my personal health and my personal self. And so setting some blocks here and there, making sure that I know that I am a better leader and a better human when I go on a walk in the morning, right? So I've started to do those things, or set like moments to do a walking one-on-one. So I'm getting out of my office. That's been important. But if you think you can come into a C-level role and, you know, work a very standard 8 to 5 with a lunch break, you're in for a little bit of a surprise. I don't think I've taken a lunch break ever in a C-level role, unless it was a working lunch. And so it's the fact of what it means when you're an executive. You have a lot of responsibility, and it's not for everybody.
Right. And I think that's the important point that we've got to drive home, right? Is that you talked about it being a responsibility that you signed up for, right? And you don't get to dictate when and where you show up, right? It's part of the role. And when you are leading large organizations, as you obviously have, you've got to be available to help the teams that you've got in place. Now, obviously, I'm sure you've done a great job of hiring leaders underneath you and making sure that they're doing the work that they need to do and strengthening the org, obviously, that way. But to your point, right, it's still you. Buck stops there. And so you've got to be able to commit to the role if you're going to take it.
Yep. Absolutely. And I know that's not what everyone wants to hear, right?
Nobody wants to
probably
hear that,
get a whole lot of messages about, oh my gosh, that's not normal. I mean, I actually made it onto the Reddit thing once, the LinkedIn, what is it called? Like LinkedIn Lunatics, the Reddit thread. I've got put over there.
Oh my gosh, stop. Now you're going to have to send that to me, because I'm going to need to go and find that.
It was awful. I was traumatized. I cried. Oh, it was so bad because I was like new in my role, and it was awful. But it was, the post was about, look, I'm working 12-hour days right now in my role. I'm not going to hide it. I don't want to apologize for it. Like, I'm actually enjoying the work I'm doing right now, and this is what's required, and that's okay. And oh, did I get beat up for that one?
It's interesting, right? Because if you're finding fulfillment in doing the work that you do, which I do as well, right? For me, I don't want to say I'm a workaholic, but like, I love what I feel honored to do every single day in my career, that I'm happy to show up. I'm happy to be there. I'm happy to do the extra. And I think that when you find that personal fulfillment and the joy in your career, the extra hours, you're happy to give them. You're happy to do it. And so I think that almost is becoming like, find that, right? Don't lock yourself into a role where you're miserable working 12 hours a day. Right. Find yourself a role that feels like you're getting as much as you're giving. And those extra hours, again, happy to give, happy to allocate them. Okay. Well, I know that part of just being a leader requires you to grow as a professional. And you talked about that, right? When you were in that role, you were growing as much as you were having an impact. What are some of the things that you do either daily or weekly or monthly that invest in your personal growth and development? Because I know you're a lot like me, Stephanie. We don't stop learning. We don't stop growing. And we've got to make personal commitments to our growth. So what are some of the things that you do?
Yeah. I do a lot of reading. So a lot of reading, I enjoy it. It's almost my breakaway, right? When I step away from the computer, I really enjoy reading. So I do read. I, even more than reading, I meet with a lot of people. So I am not working right now. My calendar was so full yesterday, I did not take lunch, right? So, and it's meeting with other executives. It's if they say, hey, can you help me with this? I just, right now, of course, I'm saying yes. It's CEOs, me reaching out saying like, how's your business going? Can I help you at all? Right? And taking those calls and just listening. I learned so much even from my mentees. I get on calls and they're experiencing a problem and we're brainstorming together. So lots and lots and lots of human interaction. I do take a lot of courses through Pavilion. I listen to a lot of webinars, especially around AI right now, right? I feel like I need to absorb everything I can to become an effective CRO or COO anywhere that I go. So a lot of conversations, a lot of listening, a lot of reading, constantly. And even in these conversations, Christy, like I'll pick things up from you where I'm like, ooh, I want to think more about that. And I'm going to go like start writing something down so I can get my thoughts out. So all of those things are constant for me. I'm not surfing the web about things that are generally not about growth.
Very good. And it makes sense, right? I think that is a common theme that we see in leadership, right? When we are committed to those roles, we're going to do the work. And I love to hear how invested you are in the community. And I know that I'm sure everybody you work with, whether it be those CEOs or your peers or your mentees, everyone is growing in those conversations. So good for you for being so proactive about that and allocating that time. Because honestly, you could be taking all that extra time for yourself right now. And you're not, and you're continuing to give back and you're taking as much as you give. And I think that is the balance that we all strive for as we continue to invest in ourselves and grow more.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
All right. Well, listen, before we wrap up today, I want to know what's the one thing you've shared so many great insights and Stephanie, your story really is inspiring. What's the one thing you want our listeners to take away with them today? If you had to leave them all with one piece of advice.
Yeah. If we go back to that very same CFO that was just hard and maybe not healthy with me. He had pulled me aside once when I was at a low and he had said, you feel like you're quiet. You're not talking, right? You're not speaking up the way that you used to. And I said, well, I've been put in a position where I don't feel like it's healthy. And his response to me was a quote that stuck with me forever. Think about the absolute worst thing that could happen. The absolute worst thing. So let's say you speak up. What is like world ending? What could happen? You could get fired, right? For saying something. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, okay. So read that out a little bit, right? So, okay, you'd get a severance. you'd find another job, right? So like, where's the risk in this, really? And so what the quote was is, if you think about the worst thing that could happen and you could live with it, what's the risk? And for me, that stuck really true. And I've taken a lot of risks in my life, and I will continue to take risks. So take chances out there, ladies, like raise your hand, right? Jump in. If you can live with the worst possible outcome, there really is no risk.
That is amazing advice. And I think that sometimes people in general, they play it safe, right? Yeah. Because they are so scared. But to your point, right? Like, what is the worst that can happen? It's advice that I offer to my daughter all the time. And yeah. So it's interesting. You know, I think I'm more like you than I'm not. I think I'm a bit of a risk taker. I do the things, I take the leaps, I do what makes me uncomfortable. And failing forward has worked for me so far. So, I mean, yeah. I'm going to keep taking those risks. Stephanie, thank you so much for your time today. All of your thoughts, your feedback, your kind of just your story, really, truly inspiring. And I'm so excited to see what the future holds for you. I know that your next opportunity is going to be a big one.
Thank you so much, Christy. This was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, everyone, if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, subscribe on YouTube, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Hi guys, I want to share a bit about an organization that I support called Wednesday Women. They're on a mission to increase the visibility of executive women leaders that you should know, learn from, and be inspired by. On LinkedIn, they share the profile of two amazing women each week, on Wednesdays, of course. And now just imagine if we all followed, amplified, and nominated the women that we want to see more of. Their initiative provides examples of women CEOs, founders, sales executives, technical leaders, and so many more. By supporting Wednesday Women, you'll see more of these professionals in your social feeds, of course, but also on stages, podcasts, and panels. If you're interested in learning more and supporting their initiative, head over to www.wednesdaywomen.org or follow them on LinkedIn.